thank you very much, Pamela, for accepting this interview. We are at Savvy, so I guess you have an exhibition.
I have an exhibition here, and I'm bumping the table. It's a solo exhibition with showing five of my works, or you can say four, depending on whether you're two of them are from the same larger work, so you can count those as two or one, but but yes, and then I'm also going to give a solo performance on Sunday.
Okay, do you want to talk about a bit those works, for example, Sonic Gestures, because I guess it relates to you for your career as a composer, performer.
Yes, so Sonic Gestures is a piece, it's a multi-channel video and sound piece that was originally commissioned by an organization called NextMap in San Francisco, and it was commissioned specifically for a gallery that was called Recombinant Media Labs, run by this guy called Not Human, and he built a really special media gallery called the Cinechamber that involved 10 channels of video that are 360 degrees surrounding the viewer with multi-channel sound as well. And so that involved 10 sort of frame-locked video channels of video playback. And so I built this piece making sort of video samples in a way of just gestures that I was making mostly with my hands and arms, sometimes involving my face, that were coupled with vocal sound. And so I was making sound gestures and actual physical gestures. And after recording all of those gestures, I then edited them to become little fragments that I used to actually compose a work that involves sometimes multiple hands that are surrounding you, sometimes one or two very long arms that come across the entire wall. Each time you see one of these gestures, you hear sound associated with it. But because I have essentially time compressed and time expanded the samples, you get sounds that are kind of across the spectrum in terms of frequency, because they've sometimes been stretched to the extent that the frequencies become very low. Also, sometimes they're stretched or condensed with pitch correction, so that the frequencies may stay the same, but then the actual quality of the sound changes because of the pitch correction. So it just was a way of building some kind of abstract building blocks that I could create this sort of immersive piece that a person sort of stands within and experiences.
Would you consider it as a sculpture of your performance?
Yeah, I suppose you could look at it that way. It's in order to make the piece, I had to give a performance of sorts, because I was in this studio having my gestures shot. And so I was making vocal sounds, I was making gestures. I was really largely, I wasn't performing a particular piece, I was actually just improvising a lot of gestures, knowing that my purpose for doing it was that I was later going to chop them up and build this piece. But it was still that I was in real time at that moment making performative gestures. And so then I think in a way, I guess you can say that the piece becomes kind of a condense, or like a view in a way of a compacted version of a lot of my performance. But it's not, doesn't really correspond in a one-to-one way with actual pieces that I perform live. But I think just because it contains my gestures and there's a certain amount of my personality or my quality that's just in those gestures, that sort of you can't really separate it from them, so it carries across in that way.
Okay. In continuation of your work, I heard and you told me that you won a prize lately?
Oh, I did. Yes, I won the Rome Prize, which is quite something. It means that I will be living in Rome for 11 months starting this September. But it's kind of a major thing. It's a really an honor to be given that prize. And I will just be given a really beautiful space and time to make work, and also to sort of socialize with 30 other, you know, scholars and artists of various disciplines and areas of study, and share dinners and conversations and so on and so forth. So that should be exciting. Is a new piece that really doesn't exist yet, but the concept is, and it's really conceptual at this time. The name of the piece is Simultaneous, and it's all about this concept of simultaneity and things happening at the same time, synchronicity and so on. But I think that the first thought I had for that concept sprung from my fascination with simultaneous translation and thinking about how craziness of the brain process that must have to go on for somebody who is listening in one language and simultaneously speaking in another language without even pausing. So to me, that strikes me as like a really remarkable ability that a human can do that. But I also, just aesthetically, find it really pleasing to hear that almost United Nations kind of chatter, where you hear somebody speaking in one language and then all these people saying exactly what they're saying, but in 5, 6, 10 different languages, you know. So I was thinking about that, and I was thinking about wanting to play with, you know, simultaneous speech in different languages. And I also just started thinking about the interesting place we are in history right now, where people are trying to multitask all the time. They're trying to do multiple things at the same time, which is really a strain on what the human is really intended to do.
Do you think it works?
I think it doesn't work, but I think people think that it does.
But it's a kind of improvisation, right, for them, somehow. Mm-hmm. I mean, as related to musical improvisation, to be able to translate live like this.
Yeah,
it's live composition, somehow.
Yes, it is, yeah. And, well, the simultaneous translation, I definitely think that works. But just the thing that doesn't work is multitasking. In other words, a person trying to do multiple tasks all at the same time. Mm-hmm. Because what happens is we have to switch on and switch off. So I'm talking about the fact that people who think that they're watching a television program, eating dinner, and writing a report all at the same time. It's like, not really. Your brain kind of has to trade off, you know? And it's really interesting because people think, for example, we're so intent on computers right now, and so our lives are so, computers have become so ubiquitous in our lives that people want to mimic computers, and they want to have the same capabilities that computers have. And people have the mistaken idea that computers do multiple things at the same time. But in fact, they don't. They just are so fast that they can switch back and forth between two things at such a rate that it wouldn't be detectable by us that they're switching back and forth. But they really aren't doing two things at once. They're doing this, and then this, and then this, and then this. And they're just doing it so fast that it seems like they're doing two things at one time. And I think people have that same limitation, but we don't like to admit it, you know, that it's like if you are trying to have a conversation with somebody and at the same time you're reading a book or you're looking at a television program or something, you really are never doing both of those things at the same time. You're ignoring the person who's on the phone with you while you take a glance at whatever's on the TV.
Yeah.
You're not really seeing the TV and hearing them at the same time, you know, or at least comprehending them or giving them the attention that they deserve when they're talking to you.
Yeah, absolutely. We're not yet there. Mm-hmm. But speaking of Italy, mm-hmm. I guess you know Italy.
A little bit, feeling. Yeah. Yeah, I it's funny, I for many years I've had occasional touring engagements overseas, and whenever I've played in Europe, the majority of my times in Europe were either in Italy or Germany, and sometimes Austria, because of Ars Electronica mainly. That's the whole Austria connection. But other than that, almost all my gigs in Europe have been either in Italy or Germany. I don't know why that is. There just don't seem to be any gigs in France. I don't.
But do you think? I mean, I don't want to take you to opera, but I mean, it's il bel canto.
Yes.
I guess it's something that comes from Italy. I mean, do you come from that? You have this background of lyrical.
I mean, my music training was, I was a voice major, so of course I studied, you know, bel canto voice and was singing opera arias and art song and so on. So I like to think of my musical background as being a combination of all of these different things that I have had an interest in. And I think it was really not until I got out of music school that I really began to become engaged with contemporary music and experimental music. And so I feel like because of that, and then before I went to music school, I was very much engaged with sort of like folk music, rock music, all of those things too. So I have all these things that come together to make the background where I came from musically, okay. And what my musical environment that I came up in.
Sure.
But these days I'm really most interested in experimental music and contemporary music and things leaning more towards the avant-garde. But I love it that whatever I do in that is informed by all these other musics that have been a part of my life as well.
So there's a tiny bit of Italy in your...
Yeah, quite a bit actually, because you know, you do so much singing in Italian when you're singing that music.
Yeah, also because I was watching some performance before we talk,
mm-hmm.
And I recognize this lyrical. I mean, you have a very high level. I can tell.
Thank you.
It was come to my mind. We're just like, oh, maybe when she will be in Rome, she will. Yeah. Take advantage of.
I will. I'm this. Sure of it.
Because
yeah.
There's also yeah. lots of folk mm-hmm. Music. I mean, yeah. Popular.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, you will discover.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, also there's a really, Italy also has a good tradition of experimental music and avant-garde as well. I mean, some really interesting things have come out of Italy and all the futurist stuff, and then you know the. Alvin Curran's, but yeah, so there's some interesting experimentation and, you know, things like that come out of there. But I just love the intersections of all of that and how, I also really appreciate this thing about the Italian language and how the vowel sounds in the Italian language are kind of the perfect vowel sounds for getting a certain kind of vocal tone production,
okay.
You know, so it's interesting, yeah.
Look forward to see what will come out of that. Mm-hmm. You're also at the Biennale, you told me yesterday, Biennale of Venice at some point.
Oh, yeah, years ago, I don't remember what year it was, but there was a music festival that was connected to La Biennale, and I think it didn't last for the entire Biennale, which goes for, you know, from spring until fall, until the end of fall, but it was maybe for a couple of weeks within that,
right.
That they had a music festival, and I was a part of that. And then another year, I was a part of a music festival that was traveling, and it was they did a component that was in Rome, and then they did something in one other city I've forgotten, and then they also did it in Venice. And when they did it at Venice, there was a connection to La Biennale.
Okay.
So a couple of times I had, but I've gone many, many times just to be an attendee. Okay. Of the Biennale and to see all the exhibitions because I really enjoy it.
I was going through your work that you will present after this place, so back in California.
Uh-huh.
And there was this performance called A Blackbird.
Okay, so A Blackbird is a chamber ensemble.
Right.
They're based in Chicago. It's a sextet. Okay. They are what is often referred to as a Pierrot ensemble, which is it's basically about the instrumentation. It was sort of it's called that because of the Pierrot Lunaire instrumentation, which was flute, clarinet, violin, cello, and piano, and sometimes percussion.
Right.
And so in their ensemble, they have all six of those. But they commissioned me to make something for them. And I made a piece that is called Ways of Looking. And I just recently finished it. I sent them I've been sending, like feeding them little bits and pieces of the score as I've been working on it. But they got the final complete score just recently.
Okay.
And it's so it's composed for their six instruments plus their speaking voices and a tape part, as we still like to call it, even though it's really a computer file, you know, which is a text collage. And this is a way that I have been working quite a bit in recent years, that I tend to make recordings of speech, often by interviewing people. And then I cut those up very much like I was talking about with the sonic gestures, cutting up those video little gestures. I frequently take speaking speech sounds and chop them up and combine them to build music. And so in the case of this piece for Eighth Blackbird, I actually interviewed every member of the sextet, and then I have these beautiful, pristine recordings of them speaking. And then I've taken samples of all of their voices and built like a text collage. So each movement, their piece is in four movements, and each movement involves some fragments of speech that they uttered when I was interviewing them, and that have been built to. And then also much of the melodic and rhythmic material that I've written for them is derived directly from transcribing the melodic and rhythmic material in their own speaking voices. It's fun. It's like there's four movements. The first movement I actually transcribed. They spoke, I made a little text collage, then I transcribed the text collage and put it in their parts, and now they're speaking it, the little fragments that I gave them. They're going to speak and play, you know, simultaneously.
Okay.
And or it, you know, in the case of the wind players, alternating speaking and okay. playing, then there's other movements where it's just the text collage that is recorded and they're playing their instruments along with it. The final movement of the piece, I join them, and I will also be speaking and singing and processing my voice with electronics in real time as they play. So.
You based in San Francisco, right?
I am.
And so, to go back to this composition and cut-up technique, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know if you call it that way. But does San Francisco have influenced you in terms of spoken words?
Mm.
Because it's kind of, I would say the Mecca, but I mean, it's the place where there's big tradition.
There's a lot of, I have met some artists who do things with text sound. Like I think, for example, I don't know if you're familiar with Charles Amarkanyan, but he's a composer who's also was a text sound artist for many years. And I remember when I first moved to the Bay Area that I was listening to his work and a lot of other people, but they're not all from the Bay Area. There's like John Giorno and Laurie Anderson and some people who are in New York. And also there's a lot of Italians, I think, who are doing, or there's a pretty famous guy who I think is Italian, I'm trying to remember his name right now, who's quite famous for speech music, you know. So it's not, I don't know, I feel like in a way with my connection to the experimental music community and the new music community, I feel like that community is kind of global in a way. So it's hard to draw a line of like where does the influence of the local influence come from versus if it's broader than that. Mm-hmm. But I will say this though, a few years back I made a piece for Kronos Quartet, which is a very world-renowned contemporary music string quartet. And they commissioned me to make a piece for them. I think this would have been 2012 maybe when that piece premiered. And the concept behind that piece was that it was about language, about accented speech. And so particularly accented English. And it kind of sprung from the fact that San Francisco has this very international community, people coming from all over the world, from all over the country, and from all over the world. You're hard-pressed to meet somebody who says they were born and raised in San Francisco. It's always like, oh yeah, I was born in New York and I came here, or I was born in Canada and I came here, or I was born in England and I came here. You know, they're all coming from all over the place. And so there are all these different speaking accents that are heard in San Francisco. Like, I have no idea what an actual San Francisco accent would sound like. But you hear people with French accents, people with Texas accents, people with, you know, Maine or, you know, New England accents, people with a Brooklyn accents. You hear all these different accents spoken with, they're speaking English, but they're speaking it either with an accent from a different region of the United States or from a different country that's also English speaking, like England or Australia or Canada or from another country like France or Germany or Israel, where they are speaking English as a second language, and so they have this beautiful lacing of their original language, the accent of that is infiltrated into their English. And so I was very fascinated with the sonic qualities of these accents. So I recorded a lot of interviews, probably about between 25 and 30 interviews, I can't recall anymore exactly how many it was, with people with all different accents. And then I again made these text collages from pieces of their speech, and then composed, I kind of made that almost as an armature to hang the string parts on, and then I composed parts for the string quartet that were again mimicking the rhythms and melodic information that's in the speech in their instruments, and also just moving in and around it. And yeah, so wow. Yeah,
fascinating.
Yeah,
since we're talking about speech, mm-hmm. I saw this other piece from your room series named Correspondence.
Oh yes, this is another piece that has a lot of use of language in it, but this is a piece that it has a long history, this piece, because I actually first started working on this piece, I don't know, way back in the early 90s, I think it might have been. And it was just something I did really quickly. I was doing a collaboration with this group, it was sort of a video performance group called 7Hertz. And we got a grant to go down to LACE, which is a performance space in Los Angeles. You know, for Europeans, I don't know if somebody has not lived in the United States, even though San Francisco is and Los Angeles are both in California, we have a very, very, very deep stage. And so it goes almost from the top of the country to the bottom, not quite, but so, and because the United States is so broad and so deep, LA is very far from San Francisco. It's like a couple of countries away, depending on which country you live in this continent. But anyway, we had this grant to go down to Los Angeles and make a piece at this place called Lace. And so I had this idea to do something about correspondence. And at the time we were doing this, this was the very nascent early days of internet and email and all of that. It was just brand new then, and not working so well as it does now. And you know, but it was, everybody was really excited about it, and oh, I'm gonna email somebody, you know. And so I thought it would be interesting to make a piece that was sort of looking at how our ways of communicating with each other have changed from the days when you would handwrite letters and send them by post, and they would have to get on a boat and go across the ocean, and it would take weeks before somebody had your letter, you know, to now when you're like instant messaging or, you know, chatting like with phone, you know, like Skype. I don't think Skype even existed yet when I first thought of this piece, but, you know, so I made this piece, and it was just, I made sort of a loose narrative. I sort of invented a pair of friends who met by accident because they were children, and one of them, their parents brought home a valise that they bought at a secondhand store, and inside the valise was an address from somewhere overseas. And so this child decided to write a letter and wrote a letter to the name that was in the suitcase at that address and posted it. And then many weeks later, a letter came back. And so this pen pal friendship started. And this is all something I just invented for this one show that we were doing. And then as time went by, these people became older and older and older, and different modes of communication became available, and things got faster and faster and faster. And the piece ends before the two ever cross the ocean and see each other face to face, but now they're sending each other an email and instantly getting an answer. And so I later got asked many years later, 20 plus, well, yeah, like over 20 years later, I got a residency at Wesleyan University to come and make, they gave me a fellowship that involved a commission so that I was to make a new piece, and then also that I would come there, I'd stay for a month, I would work with their students and maybe put the piece on students. And so I created a version of, I remembered correspondence and I really liked it, so I was like, oh, I should revive that. So I built a new version, I wrote all these sections, and it was kind of almost a brand new piece at that point. And involving penmanship and handwriting and also typewriters, like manual mechanical typewriters. And it was actually kind of humorous because the college said, you know, we're gonna give you some students to work with who will perform your piece, and we want you to work with members of the choir. So they gave me like a 20 voice chamber choir. And we would like you to work, and then I had three chamber musicians, like a bassoonist and a violist and a percussionist. And they said, and we'd like you to work with the laptop orchestra. So I said, okay. So I had the laptop orchestra. I'm like, what am I going to do with this laptop orchestra? So what I did was I made them play typewriters. So I went around to all the secondhand stores in town, and I found like five antique typewriters, and I had these laptop musicians playing typewriters, and they were so cute. They're looking at these typewriters, and I mean, really, I don't think some of them had ever seen one before, because they're 20, whatever, they're 22 or 20, or they were just like, where's the display, you know? And then they're like just touching the key and like, why isn't anything happen? I'm like, you gotta smack that key down. You can't just touch them. It's not like the little chiclet keyboard on your Mac. You gotta hit those keys with some force. And then they're like, they get to the end of the line and they're like, how do I get back to the beginning of the line? You gotta do the carriage return.
Actually, I saw in one of your videos you playing with a typewriter,
yeah.
But with the sensors.
Yeah.
Remember me a piece of Jerry Lewis. He's doing that exactly.
Oh, really?
But is I forgot which movie and which song is it? But it's.
Oh my God! I'm gonna have to. You know, there was a song. Yeah, there was a very popular song in the 60s, I think, that was a typewriter song.
There is that.
And it was very popular on the radio. So maybe he did a little routine with that.
Probably.
But yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
But I really like it, how you did it with the sensor.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. That's fun. So,
okay.
Anyway, so this piece, Correspondence, has all these choral parts. And so there's a there's a contemporary music chorus in the Bay Area called the Voices of Silicon Valley. And they asked me if I would make something for them. But I was too overwhelmed with other projects and I couldn't come up with something. I didn't have time to come up with something entirely new for them. So I said, you know, I could like create a version of Correspondence that would be, you know, modeled for specifically for your choir. And so that's what we're doing. When I get back in town, we're gonna perform some pieces, like three or four of the sections from Correspondence.
Will it be online somewhere? This can...
Well, hopefully we'll do some documentation, okay. And then eventually it will be.
I hope I can see it.